It's NOLA History Guy Podcast for Saturday, April 20th, 2019. Welcome to the pod. Well, we're kind of fibbing on the Saturday, April 20th part because it's Sunday. Happy Easter. Happy Elmer's Gold Bricks. Happy Passover. We're going to have to get a ruling from Lady Duchess of the Red Pen, my dear friend and editor, Dara Rocklin, as to whether or not Elmer's Gold Brick are kosher. But we'll sort that out as we go along. Maybe I'll ping Lady Bookseller up at Blue Cypress and see if... I think chocolate... chocolate has to be kosher. There's too many Jews that eat chocolate. Or at least there's kosher chocolate. But anyway, one of the reasons why we're coming to you, why we're doing the podcast on Sunday rather than Saturday, is because I fully planned to actually do the pod on yesterday. We were up at, or down, depends on, up if you look at it as upriver, down as down by the river, in the River Bend yesterday at doing the Art in the Bend arts market, which is always a lot of fun. It's at Nuance in the River Bend on Dublin Street. It's the Mexican restaurant, and then Barcelona Tapas, and Nuance is right there. It's a little shotgun house that has been converted to an art gallery, and once a month they do the arts market, Art in the Bend, for River Bend, of course, and it's a blast. Heather Wright invited me just months ago to participate in this event and boost it and generally pimp it around, and it's been a lot of fun to go up there when there's space. Sold a few books, ran into some people. Always great to sell the particular. I was just mentioning to one of the baristas here that it's always fun to sell the history books, of course, because they're profitable. but the fiction is, when people buy the novels, that's kind of extra flattering in that respect. So anyway, what happened was is that I fully intended to do the pod yesterday from Art in the Bend, but we ran into a problem of it was too noisy because it was too busy. It was a combination of just a lot of people came out for the market, and I was in the middle of the place, and so everything, all the sound was bouncing off the ceiling. So every time I tried to, to fire things up and get going, it just was like, man, the echo in here is killing. So I said, all right, so I wrote up everything yesterday. So it's kind of sort of technically the Saturday pod. But because it's Easter, I snagged a picture off of the really fantastic group on Facebook called New Orleans, quote unquote, Black in the Day. So, play on Back in the Day, obviously, but it's a group that Pop Keith Evans, calling Pop Keith, started the group just years ago, and it's this huge group of New Orleans folks with primarily a focus, it's just a lot of Black folks, a lot of African Americans, and it's a really, really fun group of people, and I've met some, just wonderful folks in that group. And his cover picture right now is a photo that is, it to me, it looks like the 50s. I can't, there's not There's no automobiles in it, and you know how it is with commercial trucks that, you know, companies use them for, you know, 10, 20 years. But it's a commercial truck from Elmer's Chocolates, and it's got a driver, it's got an African-American driver, and then a white guy in shirt sleeves talking in front of the cab of the truck. If you're hearing that rumble, that's the train going by, and that makes me happy. We'll talk about that another time. So it's an Elmer's Candies truck, and on the side it says Goldbrick, and it says Goldbrick Chocolate Bar refrigerator service, because, you know, it's chocolate, you don't want it to melt and all that kind of stuff. Back in the day, or black in the day, as the group goes, Elmer's Goldbrick was a year-round candy bar. You know, you could go into K&B, or you could go into a Rexall Drugs and actually buy a rectangular gold brick. And then at Easter time, Elmer's took the rectangular gold brick and turned it into an Easter egg shape. Kind of how Reese's will make the Reese's egg out of the peanut butter cup. That sort of thing. So it's that's the idea. Over time, though, you know, with just the commercialization and mass commercialization of chocolate candies, and, you know, Hershey's and Nestle just dominating even the local convenience store shelves, Elmer's kind of took a back seat, and you don't see the gold brick as much anymore. Just a lot of places don't carry it, but it always comes out at Easter, because the gold brick egg is a wonderful chocolate and nut confection. It's just, you know, you can even buy gold brick ice cream topping, which is a favorite in our house, right? You warm it up, heat it up, and then, you know, pour it over your, just spoon it over your ice cream while it's hot, and it turns into a chocolate gold brick shell, and it's just wonderful over your ice cream. So that's okay. Well, anyway, so that's our contribution to putting it back a day, and happy Easter Passover to everyone. We've got two things for you today on the pod. We're going to do the best of today in New Orleans history from Catherine Campanella. We've got a pick for this week, and then we're going to unpack another photo, which is an aerial photo that's really got me. It really inspired me. So we'll hit those two, and let's get things going. Okay, our first segment for the pod this week is we're going to keep going with taking one of the NewOrleansPass.com/Today in New Orleans History entries for the week that Catherine Campanella does for her wonderful page. Campanella, she's doing a really good job with, you know, a lot of detail on this stuff. And we're taking her Monday, April 15th edition, because the news for the day comes back from April 15th, 1958. And it's the opening of the Greater New Orleans Bridge. Now, we've had a bridge across the river. We actually did not have a bridge across the river, is the way to say it, until the 1930s. And that, of course, was the Huey P. Long Bridge out in Jefferson. And the Huey was constructed by the state primarily with the idea of being a railroad bridge. It's actually owned. The Huey is quote-unquote owned and maintained by the New Orleans Public Railroad, Public Belt Railroad. So the Public Belt kind of owns the bridge, because that's the connection, the railroad connection, East Bank to West Bank. Now, there always had been automobile lanes on the bridge as well, and it's been in recent years expanded because of the incredible growth of the last, almost 80 years, or over 80 years on the West Bank. But from the 1930s into the late 1950s, that was the only bridge across the river in the metro New Orleans area. If you lived in Algiers or you lived in Gretna, you got across the river via the ferries. You took, if you lived in Algiers, you could take the what was referred to as the Chalmette Ferry, because the landing was on the the East Bank side, was on Paris Road, and then hang on, train going by. Union Pacific, as we're speaking, because that's the old Southern Pacific, and that's the merged into Union Pacific, and that's the big that train is on the back belt here, and I'm in at the PJ's Coffee on Canal Boulevard. So that train's most likely coming from across the river over the Huey. So if you lived on the West Bank and you wanted to get downtown for some reason, get into the East Bank, get into the main part of the city, you had to take the ferry. So you took the if you worked down like at the refinery or something like that, you would go down into almost lower Algiers and take the Chalmette ferry from what is that, Woodland Avenue, the ferry landing on the West Bank, to Paris Road to the ferry landing there. The most traffic and most common the busiest of the ferries was the is the Canal Street Ferry, of course, which takes you from Old Algiers and the Algiers Courthouse up to the foot of Canal Street, and that ferry still rolls along as well. And then there is the what was known as the Jackson Gretna Ferry. You got on the West Bank landing was right there by the Jefferson Parish Courthouse and Gretna City Hall, and then you took that across to Jackson Avenue uptown, and the ferry landing there got you into that part of the city. So those were the three ferries. But after World War II, as the baby boom and the housing boom started to really explode in the city, the West Bank became a very popular and inexpensive place that folks could buy a lot and build a house. And so Algiers started to grow out from Old Algiers close to the river, going a little further down into going down into the swamps kind of thing. And then Gretna and Old McDonoughville expanded into Tarrytown. And then further out on the western side of Gretna, you start up to the Harvey Canal, you start seeing the Harvey subdivision. The subdivisions in what is referred to as Harvey, just unincorporated Jefferson, just outside the city of Gretna. So all of that starts building out in the late 40s and early 50s. The department stores start expanding out. Maison Blanche opens up the West Side Shopping Center on Stump Boulevard. They open up their store out there as basically the expansion to the suburbs starts really having a serious impact on the West Bank. Except to get to the East Bank, unless you worked at one of these stores, or you worked at some of the oil and gas industry along the Harvey Canal, if you worked in town, you had to get back to town. So that meant you had to take the ferry. And well, as commuting and the number of people commuting grew, that became problematic. So the state authorized funding to build a bridge in Orleans Parish across the river, as opposed to the Huey, which was out in Jefferson. So Campanella says she lists that the Mississippi River Bridge Authority, which was the state agency that was tasked with putting together the plans and then actually building the bridge, accepted bids on building the bridge in a contract on November 12, 1957, and then the bridge was then completed in April of 1958. The photo she's got listed shows the bridge being built. That's a photo from the West Bank looking toward the East Bank, and you can see the bridge, the construction of the bridge is moving into the river. They've built out the big permanent pier in the river, and of course the way you don't really see the West Bank side of the bridge, but the way you build something like this is both sides to the middle kind of thing. But the photo, she's got the photo dated, now it's unattributed, but she's got the photo dated at February 1st of 57, which is like, well, wait a minute, if they didn't accept the bid till November, but anyway, it's all confusing. So I'm thinking, I'll have to look back, but I'm thinking that maybe the bid for the bridge was in 56, and then, because the construction, see, this is before I was born, so I'm not totally into it, but anyway, the bottom line is that on April 15th, on April 15th, 1958, the authority opened the what was known then as the Greater New Orleans Bridge to vehicular traffic. And there's a description there in the comments and such where she's talking about on the Facebook page where a guy talks about how he's like 2 years old and the family piled into the car and it was all lit up with, you know, the big outdoor lights, and so at midnight everybody was lined up and drove across the bridge, and it's a neat thing. Now, by the time I'm old enough to appreciate the bridge, we're fast forward into the 70s, well, the 60s a little bit, you know, I don't really have serious memories of it, but by the 70s, and I'm in high school, and of course we're going over across the river for academic games to compete and such, and so driving across with, you know, older guy, you know, catching a ride with older guys and that kind of thing. And and then I also had friends who lived on the West Bank at the time, and getting from the West Bank to the East Bank by then was a challenge, because just like the growth of the West Bank and development of subdivisions on the West Bank prompted the need for the bridge, by the 70s and, you know, mid 70s when I was in high school, the continued growth prompted the need, or the starting to be the complaints about traffic, and in general just the just dealing with getting across the bridge. So that by the late 70s you start seeing what became known as the traffic controls on the bridge. Now, the MRBA, the Mississippi River Bridge Authority, had their own cops. So the cops would set up controls where you'd take the traffic coming in from Algiers and you'd hold them for 10, you know, you'd hold them, then you'd hold the people coming in from Tarrytown, and then you'd let the other people coming in from further west, let that traffic flow in for 10 minutes. Then you stop them and you let the Tarrytown people for 10 minutes and then let the Algiers people for 10 minutes. And you keep cycling through that till like 9 o'clock, when the traffic peters out, and then just let the bridge flow in normally. And that would, you know, it was a little better than the general, you know, scrum and mess of the bridge, but it was just regular traffic, but it was still a pain. It was still difficult for folks to get through. And I can just remember guys that went to Brother Martin, who lived on the West Bank, just complaining about that to no end. And then it only got worse when we were at UNO and you had to listen, you know, people trying to get across then. So basically by 83, 84, the pressure on the legislators in the area was such that they're like, well, we need to build another bridge. So at the plans were all in place to do that, and the bridge construction began right after the closure of the World's Fair, because it wouldn't have been practical, because the World's Fair was right there, pretty much, you know, the convention center is right there next to the original bridge. So you certainly didn't want to have the mix of a World's Exposition and this major construction project. So when the fair closes down, construction on a second span across the river begins. It opens in 85, and the name of the bridge is changed from the GNO Bridge to the Crescent City Connection, and that's what we've got today, where the two spans handle the traffic much better. The traffic controls were lifted. There was no need for that. After a few years, the $1 toll that had been on the bridge for years and years was also eliminated, and it's just now a tie together for the city, that you can get to Algiers, you can get into the West Bank of Jefferson Parish, and the flow was a little better. The original bridge that opened in 58 was five lanes across. It was two lanes in either direction, and then a suicide lane, well, wasn't a suicide lane because you weren't supposed to use it. It was an emergency lane, so that way, you know, EMS and cops and everything could get through without too much difficulty. The second bridge, the 80s bridge, is wider than that with three lanes on either, actually with... So three lanes? Yeah, three lanes, maybe four lanes. Now I don't remember because I don't travel it all that much. So it's like three lanes, good six, seven lanes across on the bridge. And you've got actually a contraflow lane so that when the traffic is flowing from West Bank to East Bank, you can the trucks and such can use an extra lane that will then allow them to have a little more express to, you know, come up from the riverfront along Chapultepec and come and get across the river. So that's Catherine's Today in New Orleans History. Well, that's our pick for the week of her Today in New Orleans History stuff for this, you know, ranging this week. And we'll keep doing this because she's and support her work, please. Just support her efforts with her website by going out. You'll see that if you click through, like if you get to it from Facebook, it's Today in New Orleans History. And then when you click on the link, it takes you out to NewOrleansPast.com. And one of the first things you'll see is that she's got, you know, thumbnail pictures of all her books. So by all means, go buy her book on Lake Pontchartrain. Go buy the book on Metairie. Go buy the book on City Park. They're wonderful things. So we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to unpack an aerial photo that has really caught my eye and inspired me. NOLA History Guy podcast is brought to you in part this week by ElysianFieldsPress.com, where you can purchase signed copies of Edward J. Brantley's book, Brothers of the Sacred Heart in New Orleans. When New Orleanians ask, where did you go to school, they aren't asking you what university you attended, but what high school. And that tells a local a lot about you. For 150 years, the Brothers of the Sacred Heart have educated the young men of New Orleans, giving them an opportunity to answer the question proudly by replying, St. Stanislaus, St. Aloysius, Cor Jesu, or Brother Martin. The Images of America series, Brothers of the Sacred Heart in New Orleans, showcases photographs, illustrations, and maps tracing the role of the Institute in making New Orleans a vibrant and dynamic city, able to overcome even the worst of adversity. From their roots in the French Quarter, moving to Faubourg Marigny, and finally settling in Gentilly, the Brothers of the Sacred Heart continue to make a major contribution to Metro New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana. Brothers of the Sacred Heart in New Orleans is available at Blue Cypress Books on Oak Street, Octavia Books Uptown, local Walgreens locations, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual online locations. You can purchase signed copies of Brothers of the Sacred Heart in New Orleans at ElysianFieldsPress.com. That's ElysianFieldsPress, all one word, .com. And we're back, unpacking another photo this week. This time, it's an aerial photo that starts in the foreground of the photo is the Bayou St. John area by City, the part of Bayou St. John by City Park. And then in the background is just a gorgeous skyline of downtown New Orleans with the dome on one side and moving toward the river on the other side. Kind of breaking a rule with this photo in that it's a photo I don't know who took. I don't have attribution. It was posted in a Facebook group. Now this is one of the Facebook groups I enjoy and tends to be much better about photos and photo attribution. You know, some of these people in some of these the more old grumpy old, I always refer to it as a grumpy old racist group. They're like, oh, if it's on the internet, it's free. You know, this particular group that I got this photo from isn't, they're much more respectful of authors and everything else. But this particular photo, the guy who posted it didn't, you know, really didn't have an attribution for it. So I hope, you know, I'm kind of hoping it's like a movie production company or somebody that I don't feel too bad that we can't credit the photographer. But as you see the show page, if you know who shot this, please let's make sure that we give them fair credit and everything for the photo. Make sure it's gorgeous. Whoever did it's got some skill, and we want to see more of that kind of stuff as we go along. So unpacking the photo a little bit here. We've got the bayou makes a big, basically, S-turn, you know, flows from Lake Pontchartrain to right here by City Park, then makes a almost 90-degree turn left going towards the city, and then makes a 90-degree turn right going towards the city, and then kind of fizzles out a little bit as it approaches what is now Jefferson Davis Parkway, and that was the base of the lakebound side, the lakebound end of the old Carondelet Canal, and the bayou, basically, you know, that whole area right there at right close to Jefferson Davis Parkway, where you get Orleans Avenue coming together. That was just a very swampy, marshy area for years because you had the you had the canal connecting to the bayou, and then Bayou Metairie had flowed in from following Metairie Road and following City Park Avenue and the bottom section of City Park itself, kind of into this area, and all just becomes this marshy kind of little, you know, swampy type area where these the two bayous and the canal come together. So over the years, of course, that all gets drained a little better and developed, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what we've got here. So the bottom of the photo in the foreground is the green space between the west bank of the bayou and us and Wisner Boulevard, where the Carrollton terminus of the terminus of the Carrollton Spur comes together right there by the at City Park, where Wisner Boulevard joins up with Collins Dyball in the park, leading to New Orleans Museum of Art, connecting to North Carrollton Avenue and City Park Avenue. All sort of comes together there. The streetcar terminus is there at the Bayou Bridge. So you're kind of seeing the trees there on that side at the bottom of the photo. Then the bayou itself, and you cross over, and it makes that first big left turn right there. And you see the street that's on the east side of the bayou, that's Moss Street. Now, if you look to the right-hand side, well, that's also Moss Street. It's the same street name on both sides. So, and then along Moss Street on the bayou, the bayou bridge, the big bridge over Esplanade Avenue, is just out of frame on the left. And that bridge is big. It's much sturdy. It's a very big, sturdy bridge. It was used for decades for the Canal Esplanade Belt streetcar service. So it's the one that, you know, it's you're coming out of City Park and you cross over, or you're moving, like, you know, you're heading up toward Jazz Fest or something, you might, you know, just pedestrians will walk across that bridge getting off the streetcar right there. So that's just out of frame, but then basically you see the gas station that's there on Esplanade, kind of the back part of that, then a couple of the houses that are there, then the bayou makes the turn, the street makes the turn. And you see, nestled in the trees right there, you see Pito House, which is an older mansion that's been there for some time and is now an event venue. Lots of parties and you see parties and wedding receptions and weddings themselves in that location. Then there's a set of big, looks like, kind of 60s, mid-century, late mid-century modern type buildings, and that's Cabrini High School, which is a girls' Catholic high school. Now, the older buildings of Cabrini High School front Esplanade Avenue, so you don't really see them. You see the trees of the old backyard, and then the newer construction that fronts the bayou, that is the school. That area, though, between where you see the corner where the street makes the turn and coming up to Pito House, is now just a few extra, you know, a few smaller houses and that sort of thing. That area has always fascinated me because on the first time I was researching the Esplanade streetcar line, I would go out to the Robinson Atlas plates for this area. And on the Atlas and then in the Sanborn maps as well, that's laid out as a streetcar terminal. It's a streetcar barn, and that's section of town. So what happened was is that the streetcar would the mule drawn streetcars on the Esplanade line would come to the end of the street, and then they would make the turn. They wouldn't cross the bayou at the time. Just this is the old bobtail streetcars. They wouldn't cross the bayou, but they'd make the turn, so the tracks would go along Moss Street and then come in the back of the streetcar barn that faced Esplanade Avenue. So they'd come through the barn, and then just like, yeah, this is just like the Carrollton Station uptown. You know, you come in on Jeanette, it goes through the barn, you come back out on Willow, and they head back out to St. Charles Avenue, or to Carrollton Avenue for the St. Charles line. Well, it was a similar layout, so basically, you know, the streetcar would circle around the block, basically. Come into the back of the barn, come out the front, make the turn to head back on the inbound run on Esplanade to go back down towards the old Mint. So I'm researching all this stuff, you know, a few years back, and I'm looking at this, and so I start digging around, and the one thing I have yet to find to this day about that car barn is a photograph of it. And there's not even real estate records, because it looks like that it looks like they sold the land for this at the time that would have been New Orleans Railway and Light sold the land that sold the barn and the land to the Archdiocese, who then in turn built Holy Our Lady of the Rosary Church and the school there, which was right next, you know, which. That whole area now then is the church parish, and then Cabrini High School. So I just don't have a photo of it. And you know, there's a lot of these transactions with the Archdiocese are kind of real estate vague. You know, and it goes back to, you know, that getting into that 1910s type time was just a different thing. And there's, you know, handshake and a nod between the Archdiocese and the city sort of stuff. Okay, so that's just one of these things that's just fascinated me for years. And so I see this big aerial photo, and I start trying to visualize where that car barn was. So now you move up into the middle of the S, and you see the second bridge in the neighborhood. And that's the little footbridge that goes across that we call the Magnolia Bridge, which just undergone some really extensive renovations so that it's in really good shape and everything again. So the Magnolia Bridge is there, and the bridge itself looks like it's truly a bridge to nowhere, because it's on the east side of the bayou is Cabrini High School, and the west side is just like the front lawn of somebody's house. So it really does look like a bridge to nowhere, but it's not, because if you factor in the idea that the streetcar was coming around the corner there and turning into the car barn, that bridge made it easy for people who lived on the west side of the bayou in that City Park neighborhood to basically just take the streetcar from in town, go all the way to the bayou, and then walk across the Magnolia Bridge, and you were home. So it because the streetcar was there, it makes more sense that why the Magnolia Bridge is there. And now the Magnolia Bridge, like I said, the bridge is a venue in itself. There's been outdoor dinners that have been held on the bridge. I mean, it's a city property, so you can kind of rent it out for the evening sort of thing. I have a relatively new Facebook friend who got married on the bridge, and it's lovely. You know, it just makes for, you know, the whole backdrop of, you know, with particular with Holy Rosary there and its big dome, and then just the bayou in the area. Back to the photo. Let's keep unpacking. So you go up and pass, you come into the top of the S-turn on the eastern side, you start seeing Faubourg St. John. And Faubourg St. John is kind of the logical extension of the Creole Faubourgs. You've got, you start, of course, with the Quarter, and then you cross Rampart, and you go into Faubourg Treme. And then as people, as the Creole, the Francophone families and Creoles of color, to distinguish them from the Anglo-Irish that moved uptown from, uptown to the Garden District and points further up, the Creole families and the Francophone families moved from the Quarter up into Faubourg Treme, from Faubourg Treme up a little further into what became known as Faubourg St. John by the bayou. And so you can see a good chunk of that neighborhood. And then going into what's basically looking back into what is affectionately referred to as Back-a-Town. And you start getting, following Orleans Avenue up to Claiborne. And that's Orleans and Claiborne. That's Shorty's album. When you cross, now that, the demographic boundary between Mid-City or Faubourg St. John and Faubourg Treme is, of course, Broad Street. So you go Broad to Claiborne. That's kind of, the I-10 going through Claiborne. Most people, a lot of people will associate Treme with the riverside of Claiborne, but the neighborhood goes all the way to Broad Street. And then so you see the flow of the, the low, just residential area. And then as you start moving towards downtown, the buildings start getting a little taller, all into that big skyline. And it's just a gorgeous photo. And I think I take a look at it on the show page. I think you'll like it. I don't know if you'll have the same wistful thinking about the foreground of the photo that I do, but it's just a gorgeous shot. And certainly, if anybody knows who the photographer is, please tell me, because I want to promote their work. And it's just a very good, it's a nice photo. So so go check it out and see what you think on the show page. Okay, and that's it for this week on the pod. Do our little flashback to the 50s, our unpacking of a photo. Next week's Jazz Fest, we'll do another short form, and we've got a couple of long form things in development. They take a little more research, and I like to write them out a little more than just kind of extemporizing like we do here with the short form. But we'll have a couple of those coming up after Jazz Fest. So we've got this week and next week are going to be the big festival. So if you're going out, go get some go get some food, go get your crawfish bread, go see some good music, go see some of the people that are featured in my New Orleans jazz book down in Economy Hall and in the jazz tent. Don't just spend all your time at the Gentilly stage and all that kind of, the big acts. Go support the local guys, right? So you guys go have a, go have a good week. Enjoy Jazz Fest. And we will catch up with you next week here on NOLA History Guy Podcast.